How old is God? How old is God? Let's put that just for a minute in relation to you. If you have a lot of teenagers in the group this morning, if you're a teenager, is God older than you? Was God around when you came along, and will God be around when you're gone? I think we would agree that he was here and that he will be here. Maybe you're a young adult, you're in your 20s. Was God here when you were born? Was he already around? And will he be around whenever you're gone? We have some of us who are in, could we call it late youth? Maybe we can call it that. Was God here when Rod came along? Or I'm not going to get specific, I guess I'm going to get in trouble. But when those of us who are sort of in the middle years came along, was God already here? And will he be here when you're gone? What about those who are seasoned and experienced? What about them? What about those of our older folks who are here? Was God here when you came along all those years ago? Will he be here when you are gone? Our text for this morning is Psalm 90, and so I hope that you'll turn to Psalm 90, and we're going to take a look at that. We're going to read that, take some lessons out of Psalm 90 this morning, where the psalmist says, beginning in verse 1, he's going to answer our questions about God and how long God has been around. He says in Psalm 90 in verse 1, "Lord, you have been our dwelling place in all generations, before the mountains were born, or you gave birth to the earth and the world. Even from everlasting to everlasting, you are God. You turn man back into dust and say, 'Return, O children of men,' for 1,000 years in your sight are like yesterday when it passes by, or as a watch in the night. You have swept them away like a flood. They fall asleep. In the morning, they're like grass which sprouts anew. In the morning, it flourishes and sprouts anew. Toward evening, it fades and withers away." So when you came on the scene, God had already been there for a very long time. And God will be there when you are gone. What about your great-great-grandmother's great-grandmother? Was God around when she came along? What about your great-great-great-grandchildren's grandchildren? Will God still be here whenever they come along? The answer is, of course, yes. God was here, and God will be here. The writer mentions 1,000 years. 1,000 years in respect to the existence of God. And he basically says that 1,000 years ago, so we're in 2023, 1,000 years ago in 1023, God was there. And 1,000 years from now in 3023, if the world is still here, guess what? God will still be here. And then he talks about the mountains that God created. We got some folks here now this morning, they've been with us, in fact, several times this week. I'm pretty sure they get the prize for the longest distance traveled to be here this week. They've come all the way from Utah. And in about a week, I think, they're going to be driving. They're not flying. They're going to be driving back to Utah with kids. My money's on not everybody's making it back. I don't know if that's going to happen or not. I'll check in with me. I want to see who makes it and who doesn't. But on that trip back to Utah, they're going to be driving over some mountains, right? I don't know how you're going. If you go up the northern way or you go the southern way, you're going to hit some mountains. Then you're going to hit a really boring part of the country, western Kentucky and Arkansas, Missouri, where it's just as flat as it can be, and it's so boring. Then you're going to hit mountains again, aren't you, right? Well, when those mountains were formed, whenever that was, when those mountains were formed, those mountains that you hit when you go west of here, and you got to travel over those mountains, when those mountains were formed, God was there. God was making them. And if they exist for 10 million years, God will still be here. In fact, he says, before you gave birth to the earth, when the planet came into existence, when the Big Bang happened, and make no mistake, there was a Big Bang. It was not a random, some molecules bouncing around, don't know where they came from. if you don't believe in God, but a bunch of molecules bouncing around, they smacked into each other somehow, and bang, there was the universe. Well, there was a big bang, but it happened because God made it happen. And God made that happen, and the universe was created. He was there already, and He will be there long after it's gone. God existed before the world was made, and He will exist after the world is gone. But you know, God is not the only being that we can say that about, is He? God is not the only being that everything that we have just said, we can say that also about the angels. Did you realize that? Think about the Archangel Michael. Think about the Archangel Michael. The Bible tells us, at least it seems to, in Job 38 and verse 7, that when God created the physical universe, the angels sang for joy. Well, if that's true, then what had to come first? If the angels are singing for joy, then the angels had to be here before the universe was here. And so Michael was there, and he was watching God create the universe, and he was singing about that. And then we go on and we read in the book of Jude that Michael was disputing with the devil about the body of who? The body of Moses. So the Michael was there when the world was made. He was there when Moses died. The Bible tells us that he was there when Daniel was praying. And when Daniel was having a hard time getting his prayer through to God, Michael showed up, took care of business. Michael was there in Daniel's lifetime. And the Bible tells us that Michael was there when there apparently was this war in heaven where the devil thought he could go and play on Jesus' home court and win. And Michael was there and he took care of business. So Michael was there before the earth was made. And even after the ascent, Michael has been around for a very long time. You know who else has been around for a very long time? The devil. The dragon, as he's called in Revelation. Satan, who was probably an angel, is probably an angel, probably there before the world was made. We know that Satan was in Eden at the beginning. We know he was there. We know that the devil was living at the time of Zechariah, 400 BC, because the devil was standing at the right hand of God's high priest, calling attention to his sin. So we know the devil was there. And we know that the devil is prowling around like a lion in the New Testament. The devil has been around for a very long time. And he will be around for a much longer time. So when we say that God was here before the universe was made, and he was here when you were born, and he'll be here after you're gone, that's also true of Michael. It's also true of the devil. But what does this psalm tell us about God that is not true of the angels? What does this psalm tell us about God that is not true of Satan? It says that God is what? From what? Everlasting. What does everlasting mean? Always is. God is from everlasting what? To everlasting. As far back as you want to go that way, who was there? God. As far forward as you, if you could fast forward 6 trillion years from now, who would still be there? God would be there. God is eternal. We're talking about in Psalm 90, the eternity of God. As we begin today, a series, Lord willing, a series of 3 lessons on the attributes of God, getting to know God better. And I'm going to tell you why that matters in just a minute. Not yet. But I want to tell you why that matters. But first, what we're talking about in Psalm 90. God is from everlasting to everlasting. That is, God is eternal. But I want you to look very carefully at Psalm 90 and verse 2, and I want you to see if you can find a second attribute of God. In Psalm 90 and verse 2, again it says this, "Before the mountains were born, or you gave birth to the earth and the world, even from everlasting to everlasting, you are God." That's His eternity, but it's something else. There's another attribute of God that is contained in Psalm 90 and in verse 2, and it's very important. It is as important as His eternity, and it is His immutability. Notice what it says, from everlasting to everlasting, what? You are God. Not from everlasting to everlasting. You started out as that. You became this. You're going to turn into that. And later you'll be that. You see that? From everlasting to everlasting, God is the same. And that's what immutability means. It means that God never changes. God told his people in Malachi chapter 3 and verse 6, I, the Lord, do not change. In fact, that's what the word Lord in that context means. Because it is a translation of what word from Exodus 3:14? Yahweh, we guess. Yahweh, which means what? When Moses was standing in front of God in the burning bush, and God said, Moses, I want you to go to Egypt and get my people out of bondage. And Moses said, I can't just show up there and go, hey, Moses is here, let's go. I've got to tell the people somebody sent me. Who is it? And what did God say? Tell them, I am who I am has sent you. What does that mean? That sounds like a nonsense statement. I am who I am. What does that mean? You are what? Well, you are. You exist. You are eternal. And you exist as an unchanging being. God was never, I wasn't. Let me say that again. God was never, I wasn't. I was, I wasn't. You were, I wasn't. You were, you wasn't. You weren't. Anyway, you see what I'm saying? I was, I wasn't. There was a time, as bleak and dark as the prospect may be, there was a time when there was not a David Price. I know, I know. The world was in black and white by then. It was really sad. But there was a, it's okay, it's not that funny, but okay. So there was a time when David Price didn't exist. I wasn't. I wasn't anything. And then I was. See, I'm not immutable, and I'm not eternal. I was a football player. I was a college student, sort of. I was childless, but I'm not any of those things anymore. You see how people change? You were something, you're something, and you'll be something. God never changes. What God is right now is what he's all. Can you imagine that? There's nothing else in our experience like that. The house that you live in, that you count on being stable and dependable, is different today than it was when you bought it. The car that you drive, the job that you have, you are different than you have been. God never changes. God is always the same. And so we ask ourselves a big, fat, so what? So what? What does this mean to anything? Shouldn't this be talked about in seminary or at Florida College or at Fried Hardeman? Why are we going to talk about it here on a Sunday morning with regular people like you and me? Why are we talking about this? The reason, very simply, is because what you know about God matters. And what you do not know matters. And I cannot emphasize this enough. I'm going to try, but I won't. What you know about God matters. A thorough knowledge of God is not just for preachers, theologians, seminary professors, authors of Christian books, internet preachers. What you know and do not know about God matters a lot. In fact, the book of Hosea chapter 4 and verse 6 gives us this fact. My people, God said, are destroyed for what? Not sin, not bad behavior, not drunkenness, cussing, sleeping around. What does he say? My people are destroyed for lack of knowledge. They don't know what they need to know, and I'm going to destroy them. My question for you this morning is, do you know what you need to know? What is the level of your knowledge appropriate to where you are? Maybe you've not been around church much. Well, Nobody expects you to know much. Maybe you haven't read the Bible much. Maybe you haven't been a Christian very long. Well, okay, then you don't know much. That's to be expected. But if you grew up in church and you know that what you know about the Bible is not what it ought to be, do you reckon that's a problem? God said, I am going to take my people and destroy them because they don't know what they ought to know. They don't know it. And they will perish because they don't know it. He says, because you have rejected knowledge. Notice that. You rejected it. It was there, but what? You turned it down. It was there. It was accessible. By the way, when Hosea was speaking this 2,700 or 800 years ago, how many people could read? If we had a group of people this number in Hosea's day, how many of us could read? Of those who could read, how many owned a complete copy of God's Word? In Hosea's day, how many people would have owned whatever was complete for them, a complete Word of God? So to these people who could not read and could not own a Bible, he said what? You don't know it, and I'm going to destroy you. You have rejected it. What do you imagine he will say to people who can read and have access to it 24 hours a day who still don't know it? What do you imagine will be the message? And it's not really that we don't have time, is it? It's not really that. It's not really that we just can't fit it in, is it? Isn't it really that we make the choice to not read the Bible? Isn't it really that we make the choice not to be where the Bible's being taught every time? Isn't that really what's going on? He says, you've rejected it, and I'm rejecting you. Since you have forgotten the law of your God, I will also forget your children. Is it a big deal to know the Word? It is. God destroys His people for not knowing. But there's another reason that it's important for us to know the Word of God. And that is because what we know or do not know affects the way that we live. So I just want to be really clear about this. Whatever you do with it is one issue. But not knowing it is wrong. Now, taking that to the next level, not doing it is wrong also. So what does this look like? Well, what we know or don't affects the way we live. Years ago, I used to think I knew what healthy food was. And I would eat healthy and not figure out why I couldn't get healthy. I mean, after all, I was eating chicken. It was fried. But it's chicken. And in my head, chicken equals healthy. Doesn't matter what you do to it. I was eating salad. All you ever hear, salad is healthy. Eat salad, lose weight. Eat salad, get healthy. I'm eating salad. Completely drenched in ranch. But it's salad. Eating a lot of fruit. Boy, fruit's healthy, isn't it? Gotta eat fruit. Eat fruit. I'm eating fruit. Like crazy. Loaded with sugar. Broccoli's healthy, right? Isn't broccoli healthy? Broccoli casserole, eating plenty of that, not so much, not good for the health. You see what I'm saying? Because I did not know what I needed to know, what I was doing was not good. My knowledge was bad, my actions were bad. If your knowledge of God is wrong or deficient, then what? Your actions will be wrong or deficient. So obviously the sweet spot is to know the right thing and do the right thing. This is the zone we want to live in. James said in James chapter 1, receive the word implanted which is able to save your souls. Then what else did he say? Be what? Don't just hear it. You need to what? You need to do it. Be what? Doers of the word. He said, don't be like a person who looks in a mirror and says, wow, my hair is sticking up all over the place. I'm going to go out anyway. Can you imagine anybody doing that? Can you imagine some knucklehead looking in the mirror and his hair sticking up all over the place and he goes out anyway? I can't imagine somebody that foolish. But people do. But James says, when you take the Bible and you read it and you know it, you learn it, you know what it says, and then you put it down and go do what you want, that's wrong. He says you wouldn't do it in the morning before you go out in the world. Don't do it spiritually. So the sweet spot, what we're after is knowing it and doing it. Now, it's possible to know it and choose not to do it. That's possible. It's possible to know it and choose not to do it. Romans chapter 1, the wrath of God is revealed from heaven against all ungodliness and unrighteousness of men who suppress the truth in unrighteousness. For what is known about God was evident to them, for he made it evident to them. And even though they knew God, they did not honor him as God or give thanks. They knew it and chose not to do it. And James in James 4 and verse 17 said, that's what? To one who knows the right thing to do and does not do it, what? That is sin. We want to know it and do it. Now, is it possible to know wrong and do right? Is it possible to know wrong and do right? The answer might surprise you. Sometimes. Sometimes. There are some things that you can have the wrong facts on and still be okay with God. But there is a baseline of knowledge that you must have. Turn over to Psalm 50 and notice what he tells his people in Psalm 50. There is a baseline of knowledge that you must have in order to be right with God. There are certain things that you have to know in order to be right with God that if you do not know them correctly, you cannot have a relationship with God. Psalm 50. I want you to notice that the problem with these people in Psalm 50 was not that they were doing the wrong things. In verse 8, God says, I do not reprove you for your sacrifices and your burnt offerings are what? Continually before me. What were they doing? They were doing the worship. They were doing the things, the actions, the rituals. But, he says, in verse 18, when you see a thief, you're pleased with him. You associate with adulterers. You let your mouth loose in evil. Your tongue frames deceit. You sit and speak against your brother. You slander your own mother's son. So they were doing some right things, but they were doing a lot of bad things. And now he tells us why that is. Look at verse 21. These things you have done and I kept silence. Here's the problem. You thought that I was just like you. You see the problem? Their knowledge of God was wrong. And so many of the evils and the problems in our world begin with that statement right there. Where God is saying, you thought I was. fill in the blank. You thought I was accepting of anything that you want to do as long as you're happy. A lot of people fill in the blank that way. You thought that I would let you do whatever you wanted as long as you were happy. Their knowledge of God is wrong, therefore their life is wrong. And this is what we've got to be careful about. Knowing wrong leads to doing wrong. What you know or do not know matters. It makes a difference. You knowing that God is eternal and that God is immutable or unchangeable matters. And here's the reason. Verse 1. He says to God, "You have been our refuge in all generations." So here's the point. This is what it's all about. What is your refuge? Where is your trust? What are you counting on to get you through life and its hardships and the judgment? What are you counting on? What are you trusting? What are you trying to build and say, that's it? This is what is going to protect me and provide for me. What is that thing? And if it's anything other than God, it's not going to work. It's not going to work. Why not? What's one thing that businesses sometimes advertise about themselves to get you to trust them and use their services? What's one thing that businesses will often tell you about their business to get you to trust them and use their services? Very often they will advertise that they have been in business since, and then they'll give you some year that's going to be a long time ago. Right? No business is going to advertise themselves in business since May 2023. Why wouldn't they do that? Because you're not going to trust them. Well, I know they're here now. They may not be here tomorrow. They could have started their business today, and maybe they're terrible at it, but nobody knows because they haven't been around. What I want to know is, when I use a business, is have they been around a while? That way I know they know what they're doing, people are trusting them, and if I have a problem, then what? I can go to them, and they're still going to be here. If God had a business sign, what would it say? If God had a business sign, what would it say? God, in business since forever. Forever. God has always been in business. He's always been around. He's always been doing the things that He does. And just as importantly, He is the same God who's doing it for us as who did it for David and Moses and Abraham and Paul and everybody else. See, just because a business has been around a long time doesn't mean anything unless it's actually the same business. Recently, I called a local business to come and work on something at my house. I'm going to change the names to protect the guilty. I'm going to change the business type just because I think if I said to change the name, I think you'd know who I was talking about. So I call up this business who has been in business in Carteret County for a very long time. And I wanted them to come out and do something at my house. So they came out. And I said something about the owner and how the owner was doing. The man whose name was on the business and has been for decades. And I said, "How is Mr. Jones?" And they said, "Mr. Jones doesn't own the business anymore." And I said, "But wait a minute. It's still called Jones Carpentry." They said, "Yes. He sold the business to us, went and started another business, but he let us keep his name. Why? Why did he let people keep his name? Because we all trust it. But what I got, thinking it was the same business who's been in business for decades, it wasn't that business. And that's not what I signed on for. It's not what I expected. A business is only, it only matters if it's the same business that's been around the whole time. And it's unchanged, and God is. God is completely unchanged. Well, you can take out your songbook. What? Who's leading it? What is it? What is the number? Number 703. We're going to sing that song in just a minute. Next week, Lord willing, we're going to look at Job 42, and we're going to be talking about the which omni? I got my omnis mixed up. What do I need? The all-powerful. What is that? Omnipotence. I completely left me. We're going to be talking about the omnipotence of God. Maybe we should talk about the omniscience of God. He knows everything, and apparently I don't know anything. And so the whatever that is, God is all-powerful. We're going to talk about it, Lord willing, next Sunday morning. Tonight, we're going to be back here at 6 o'clock talking about the Song of Solomon, and I can't wait. When's the last time you heard a sermon about the Song of Solomon? Boy, you're going to want to be here for that, right? Song of Solomon, you got to be here for that. And so tonight, Song of Solomon, chapter 5, we're going to talk about that. But to wrap it up for this morning, what you know or do not know about God matters very much. Knowing that God is eternal and immutable matters to you very much, because God is the only refuge that you can count on. If you don't believe me, check this out. Today, what is today? The 3rd? 4th? What is today? June 3rd? 4th. Thank you. Today, June the 4th, today, in our country, 4,900 people will become disabled and unable to work. Today, before this day is over, almost 5,000 people will not be able to go to work tomorrow or ever go again, because they are injured or disabled in some way. Think about that. Almost 5,000 people who believe that they have years of work left in them, years of making money, years of providing, today will never do that again. What are they going to do? What are they going to do? How are they going to eat? Where are they going to get money? What are they going to do? Today, literally today, by the end of this day, in America, 47,000 people will lose their jobs. 47,000 people who now have a job and feel pretty good about what's coming up. They feel pretty good about providing. They feel pretty good about their family, the financial condition of their family. Today, tomorrow, they won't have a job. They'll be out of a job tomorrow. What are they going to do? Today, before this day is up, 13,700 people will lose their home. There are 13,700 people in this country right now who think that they have a place to live tomorrow, and they do not. Be out. Where are they going to live? What are they going to do? Before this day is out, in America, 8,200 people will be dead. There are people right now who are alive who, by the time this day is over, will be gone. The vast majority of them thinking, planning for tomorrow. Most of them. Most of them have a plan for tomorrow. Those 8,200 people right there think they know what they're doing tomorrow. They do not. And whatever it is that they're counting on, whatever it is that they're depending on, whatever it is that they've been building, unless that is God, means nothing. It's nothing. Not only that, but there are the families and friends and co-workers and employees of 8,200 people who tomorrow will lose people they've depended on. Some of them will be wives and mothers who do not work outside the home, who are depending on their husband to bring home a paycheck, and he dies today. What are they going to do tomorrow? A company who's run by somebody and they've got 100 employees Looks like everything's going well. The boss dies today. What do the employees do tomorrow? What do they do? Where are they going to work? How are they going to make a living? People in relationships. Some of those 8,200 people who are going to die are husbands and wives, children, parents. And they're going to leave people, I can guarantee it, that some of those who die are going to leave people who were depending on them. Not just for their livelihood, for their happiness, for their security, for their stability. And by the time the day is out, they're gone. And those people who have been building their lives on those people or those jobs in those homes, what are they going to do? Everything that they have been building on is gone. Where do you go? Any of those could be us. My question is, what are you building on? What is your refuge? What are you seeking? Where are you seeking for safety and security and stability? If it is not God, it may not be here tomorrow. You may not be here tomorrow. And so as we sing this song, all of us need to be thinking about our relationship with God. Maybe you don't have one. When you die, you've got nothing. If you're not a Christian, when you're dead, you have nothing to depend on. In the day of judgment, nothing you can say, nothing you can offer, no reason you can give, no backup plan, it's over. If you are a Christian, you still might be building on things of the world. Jesus told a parable one time about people who accept the gospel and they become Christians, but then the things of the world choke out the word and they become unfaithful. That could be you. And you know that you're building on something that is not dependable. If while we're singing this song, you realize that you're building on something that is not dependable, or you already knew it, but you're finally ready to do something about it, then we would love to help. We would love to talk to anyone who's here, privately after church, or you can come forward and take a seat on the front as we stand and sing.